Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck, live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Bulls fans, welcome back after a pretty great weekend. I don't know about you, Matt, but I had a pretty decent weekend. Hopefully all of our listeners did as well. If you didn't hear so far, if you don't follow us on social media, if you don't like using Twitter or Facebook, we did announce after the episode we dropped on Friday with Ricky O'Donnell, which is a great interview between Matt and Ricky. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that, you should go listen to that. But we dropped another giveaway. So we did our Lowry Marketing giveaway in November. That was a wild success. So we figured we want to give back again. So we have an opportunity for you and another guest to join Matt and I at a Bulls game on February 9th, the return of Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, and Tom Thibodeau. Say,
not just a Bulls game. The Bulls game. As far as national spotlight this season, it doesn't get better than Jimmy Buckets coming back to Chicago.
It's true. And I think this game is probably going to be the game of the year for the Bulls in terms of hype, in terms of excitement. And like you said, it's the only national game, nationally televised game that is to be played by the Bulls this season. So if you want an opportunity to join us, you and a friend, we'll have four tickets total. Me and Matt will be joining you, but all you have to do is go to iTunes or your favorite podcast player. Leave us a review. Takes about 15, 20 seconds. Screenshot that and send it to us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. It's simple. Takes 2 minutes, and you could have the opportunity to be spending a Friday night with us, joining us, watching Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, and all these, and Tom Thibodeau return to the United Center. Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson, obviously their first return since their trade. So this is going to be a great night, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So hopefully you do enter, submit that review. It, like I said, it takes 30 to 60 seconds. Shoot us an email with it and you'll be automatically entered to win. But Matt, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well, Jordan. I mean, other than watching the inevitability of another Tom Brady comeback in the playoffs on Sunday. I guess go Eagles. Like, I hate the Eagles and I hate their fan base. They're terrible people. But this is a picking between the lesser of two evils situation. So for all of our Locked On listeners who are also big football fans, you should be checking out the Locked On Eagles shows, the Locked On Pats show, as we have the next couple of weeks getting geared up for that big Super Bowl Sunday. But yeah, other than that, I am really excited about this next giveaway we're going to be doing. We should also clarify, because we've already had a couple of, I don't know if they were jokey questions or legitimate questions, but some people on Twitter saying, hey, like, I don't live in Chicago. Can I win this giveaway? And will you buy my plane ticket to come to Chicago? We will not be covering any travel expenses, airfare, lodging. We're giving you two tickets. You need to get yourself to the greater Chicago area. Get yourself to the United Center. We'll meet you there and give you two free tickets. And we'll probably also buy you a couple of beers and some nachos. Or if you're not a beer drinker or a Coke, whatever you want. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. This was definitely one that was circled on my calendar for this bull season. Jordan, I'm sure you feel the same. And you know that it was circled on Jimmy Butler's calendar. You know it's circled on Tom Thibodeau's calendar. I'm curious to see what the balance in the crowd will be like and what kind of receptions they'll get. I'm sure Jimmy Buckets will draw loud cheers. Pretty sure Tom Thibodeau will draw loud cheers. But the Bulls-Warriors game, which was probably behind the Minnesota game in February, the second biggest game at the UC all season, which I went to this past Wednesday, there were a bunch of Warriors fans there. So you wonder, like, how many, if, you know, what kind of percentage will we see as far as people in, you know, Timberwolves gear at the United Center? But looking forward to it. Less than a month away. It's going to be a lot of fun. Like Jordan said, really easy to sign up. We'll put out another a notification on Twitter with those specific instructions after we post today's episode. Why not? Why not enter for your chance to win two free Bulls tickets, a chance to hang out with me and Jordan at the Madhouse?
Absolutely. And we're going to be doing some special stuff to some, hopefully a video too, as we search through the United Center, maybe talk to some fans, have some exclusive stuff too for the podcast as well. So it's going to be an all around great night. And like I said, like Matt said, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of your time to send us an email, a screenshot of a review, and you have an opportunity to go to a game that I guarantee the week before the game, maybe even 10 days before the game, tickets are going to be sold out or they're going to be at a high premium. So yes, definitely submit your reviews. So I've got a lot to talk to you, Matt, about, because I missed the interview with Ricky O'Donnell as my internet had an absolute meltdown on Friday morning. So Matt,
these things happen. It's okay.
Well, I'm just going to put the blame on Comcast on that.
Always,
one,
so. Always blame Comcast. They are the friggin' worst.
So I did want to touch on a lot of stuff with Ricky O'Donnell in the first 10 minutes or so here, because I thought phenomenal interview. He's got great insight in college basketball, and he brought up a lot of different takes that I haven't heard from players or in-depth things about college basketball players outside of the guys that we normally talk about. You know, your DeAndre Ayton, your Michael Porter, your Marvin Bagley, Luka Doncic, Trae Young. All of these guys, but he had definite insight on guys that if the Bulls happened, which it seems like day by day we get here, the tank is coming more to a close, that door is sort of shutting. He's giving us a little bit more options, maybe at the back half of that lottery. So I appreciate all his takes. But the one thing I did have to start off with, though, was I completely and utterly disagree that Nico Mirotic is the best Bulls player right now on this roster. You know, for the stretch that he has played, the 4, 5, 6, let's call it 6 weeks since he's come back. I think he's been phenomenal for the Bulls, but overall, I don't think he's been the best player on this team. Regardless, I get it. He's coming off the bench. Maybe he should be getting a few more minutes here or there, but I also disagreed where he thought maybe the Bulls could get a pick between 15 and 20. And he was even saying that you maybe think about doing that. I think if there's any question that you're going to get between 15 and 20 pick in the first round, you absolutely take it. We talked about it, you know, over the last 3 weeks or so. And I brought it up too. And I said, you know, if you're lucky and you can get a back end of the first round pick for Nico, and then a player that you can match salaries with to bring on as an expiring contract, I think that's more than enough. And I think there's interesting points to Nico Mirotic's success and to his game. Like we talked about with Danny Parkins and some of these other guys that had some insight about Mirotic. But I had to say, man, if you can get a pick between 15 and 20 for Mirotic, I don't think the Bulls put the phone down. They say immediately, I don't care what you're tossing in with that. It's an overwhelmingly yes.
Yeah. And first of all, thanks again to Ricky O'Donnell for doing that interview on Friday. I always enjoy chatting about basketball of all kinds, NBA basketball, Bulls basketball, college hoops with Ricky. He's a great basketball mind and a really great guy to chat with. So again, if you haven't listened to that interview from our show last Friday, you definitely should. But I agree, Jordan. I was surprised that Ricky, you know, and I kind of asked him to confirm, because for a while in our conversation, it was sounding like he thinks maybe the Bulls should keep Nico. You know, keep him past the deadline, keep him this season, pick up his option next season. If he continues to play this way, maybe. And, you know, as you also mentioned, our interview with Danny Parkins of 670 The Score on Thursday, kind of what Parkins was saying, like, you know, whereas Parkins still thinks we should trade Nico if we can get value for him, Ricky kind of echoing the sentiment of, well, look, I mean, if the Bulls get themselves a back half of the lottery, back half of the first round pick for Nico Mirotic, Is that player going to be better than Nico, than the version of Nico we have right now? And of course, the other side of that argument and quandary is, well, yeah, but is this Nico, this great 2017-18 season Nico, going to stick around? And I mean, is this just the ceiling that we're seeing, and he might regress into what we have seen from him in previous seasons? So that's kind of the worry. And honestly, I was surprised to hear Rookie say, I'm not necessarily sure that moving Nico is the best move. And he mentioned the fact that he is still only 26 years old, although I think between, I don't know whether it's the beard or the fact that Bulls fans have struggled through before this season, three very up and down seasons from Nico. It certainly feels like he's older than that, right?
Seriously.
So not necessarily out of the realm of fitting into the age timeline of this rebuild the Bulls have. The fact that he's still, 4 years on the right side of 30. So I was surprised to hear Ricky say that. I would disagree with his hypothesis that maybe keeping Nico is the better option, even if the Bulls have a decent offer on the table. I'm with you, Jordan. I still think if the Bulls can find themselves a trade that they feel is moving in the direction of this rebuild and can move the rebuild forward. And also, this is the other factor. Maybe, like you said, you disagree that he's our best player this season. He's certainly one of the best Bulls players since he's been back. Kind of steer this season towards the tank again, because it's encouraging to see the wins. It's encouraging to see the young kids play well. But the Bulls, if they lose a bunch more games in February, March, and into April as the season winds down, they can kind of get themselves back into that neighborhood of maybe having a chance at the top five pick. Like, that's still very much so on the table. And trading away Nico, or perhaps trading away Robin Lopez or Justin Holiday or whomever, could kind of push the Bulls back in that direction. I think that's the direction they need to go.
And you know what, too? I think I was, as we were talking with Danny Parkins, and I kind of took the weekend to sort of continue to think about this, and they extended the conversation onto 670 The Score too. And as I was listening to sort of what Matt Spiegel was saying, and even some of the other guys that they had on in talking about the different options, and specifically in terms of, is Mirotić, would you take Mirotić now this season? Would you take him, or would you take the player you would get, say, whatever it is, between 20 and 30? Who would have the better season? Well, I would take that and spin it this way. Maybe we're not even looking at the right path here. Maybe we're completely blind to the fact that maybe if they do move Nico Mirotić, they don't even care about the Bulls in general. Don't even care about who they would get between 20 and 30. Maybe so they're looking towards, hey, you know what? We started off 3-20, but this team's a lot better than a 3-20 team. And maybe if we move Mirotić, but we keep guys on like Robin Lopez, who they've said that they liked and they don't want to give away for basically nothing. And you keep Justin Holiday around, you keep another guy like Jerry and Grant around too. You've got Zach LaVine coming back, and now with Chris Dunn out a little bit, but if he does return relatively soon, I mean, you're still going to have a month and a half, 2 months of a stretch of games to still play. Maybe they're looking at it in terms of, okay, we're not going to have like a for sure fire chance or the best opportunity to get in that top five. But we heard Nick Friedel tell us that the Bulls are without a doubt so high on those top four or five guys that maybe they take that late first round pick and they use it as bait to try and move up if they land anywhere between, I would say, 7 and 12, 13. Maybe they use that as a piece around the NBA draft this summer to try and move up to that top five. So that's another option that I think people are kind of overshadowing a little bit. And maybe the Bulls have something up their sleeves that we don't really think about. But I think that's an obvious move too, is like, if the Bulls still play well without Mirotić after they trade him and they get a late first round pick, maybe they use that to package him to try and move up in this draft.
I mean, that's a nice thought for Bulls fans, but I also think it's a thought that Bulls fans shouldn't waste their time on. No offense, Jordan, but what? Assume that the tankathon kind of stays where it is right now. If you look at some of these teams that are going to be gunning for the most ping pong balls and have the chance at, you know, drafting those top five guys, who among them is looking to trade down? I don't see that. I mean, Sacramento, Atlanta, Orlando, Dallas, Memphis. You think Phoenix, you think any of those teams would pass up the opportunity to draft a Luka Doncic, an Ayton, a Bagley, a Mo Bamba, to just have two picks in the first round instead of one, when really those top tier guys are looked at as right now potential franchise changers? And then there's a pretty big drop off in the 7 through 10 and the rest of the lottery. Like, I don't know who they would convince to trade down. that Dallas, the days of Dirk are over. They probably would love to get either Bamba or Bagley or Ayton to pair with Dennis Smith Jr. Atlanta and Orlando are franchises starving for a star. Sacramento, I mean, like they got Buddy Hield lying around, but after the departure of Boogie Cousins, they are desperate and starving for a superstar potential draft prospect. I don't see anyone trading down. Like, yeah, it's cool if the Bulls can add another draft pick late in the first round, if they're able to get that for Nico. But I don't think that they can then turn around and take that and wherever they end up, if they do kind of stay in that somewhere between 7 and 15 range. I don't think that those two things can collectively get them to a top five pick, because when you have one of those top five picks, we've seen it year in and year out. Unless you're the Boston Celtics and you have a great plan and you know the secret that is Jason Tatum versus Markelle Fultz, trading down doesn't happen that often.
I tend to agree with that. I feel like that kind of squashes that. But at the same time, too, I guess it would determine where the ping pong balls fall. Because what happens if a team that's sort of trying to contend or at least thinking about contending, and I know for a team that might be competitive or looking to try and contend, for them to take a player at top five and try and develop him, but also, you know, also try to make that push for a playoff spot and sort of be competitive. I think that maybe if you find the right package, and I don't even know what the right package would be in this scenario or what team they would go to. But I feel like that option, like you said, maybe it's only a small chance. I just feel like that option alone can't be completely thrown out the window. And we'll see what the Bulls can get for Nico if they do, in fact, end up trading him. And hey, who knows? Who knows? Maybe the Bulls got something up their sleeve where they could get another first-round pick besides for what Nico Mirotić, or they can combine some types of players that might fit into a system better than maybe some of these other teams that are going to be in the top five that would draft a player where the Bulls would want or how high they are on some of these guys. You know, there's a lot of moving factors in it. And I agree with you in the fact that the teams that sit there right now, like you said, Atlanta, Orlando, Dallas, Sacramento, and Memphis, like a lot of those teams, they're at the bottom for a reason. They're trying to find that franchise player. And that's where it gets tough for the Bulls, because it's like the Bulls too need that franchise changing players, but they're all a step ahead of a lot of those teams that I just named. And I mean, you could even throw the Phoenix Suns in there too. And some of these other teams that are kind of meddling. So I think the Bulls are in a good spot for what they have on their roster right now. But I think in terms of the fans that wanted the tank to go on and continue, I think the door is about shut on that. We can still hold out a little bit until the trade deadline goes. So maybe a few more weeks of holding on to that hope and see how long it takes for Chris Dunn to come back. But between that, I think the door is about shut on a complete tank this year.
Well, I mean, they're kind of right in the middle. And that's why, you know, as I was saying, what happens between now and February 8th will, you know, largely play a part in determining how this bull season winds up. And if, you know, as they sit ninth in the tankathon rankings right now, if they get closer to the top five or further away, because right now they're 4.5 games back from the worst record in the league. That's Sacramento and Atlanta at 13-32. And they're also 5.5 games out of the eighth playoff spot in the East, because the East in the bottom tier of the playoff race, and then, you know, the seeds 5 through 8, pretty much just like every year, is a bunch of wishy-washy. I mean, the Wizards are the fifth seed currently at 26-20. They're having an okay year. Pacers barely above 500. Sixers, Bucks are on a, you know, on a spiral downwards. They just fired Jason Kidd today. The Pistons, the Knicks, the Hornets, like none of them are really trending in the right direction. And like those three teams are what separate those three plus Milwaukee are what separate the Bulls from the eighth seed in the playoffs right now. And 4.5 games away from the worst record in the league. It could go either way, honestly, and it will largely depend on what this roster looks like for the end of February, all of March, and the handful of games in April. And personally, I hope that they do execute some trades, get some value in return for Nico. If they trade Robin Lopez, you know, maybe they can get a late first rounder for him or a young prospect and try to, you know, I know it's Fred Hoiberg doesn't want to lose. The guys on his roster are trying to win every game, and you cannot fault them for that. Absolutely not. That's what they should be doing. They are competitors. But it's kind of, you know, that perfect combination of, hey, the young kids, the young core played really well tonight, but we fell short. You know, we lost by a few, but we were competitive the whole game. Honestly, I want 40 more of those. I want 40 more of those in a top three pick.
All right. So it's to get to some other news too here quickly. Matt, did you know that this podcast is considered a Denzel hater podcast?
I saw that review, or I can't remember if it was on Twitter or an iTunes review.
It's on Bulls Reddit. So on Bulls Reddit, we had our episode posted there. Somebody had posted it from the interview we did with Danny Parkins, and just out of nowhere, I was like, okay, I'm reading this. So I'm going to read it for you guys. It said, I had unsubscribed from this, from their podcast. I tried to like it, but I just cannot put up with the two guys on there. That constant hate on Denzel Valentine is just so off-putting to me. Does he have his limitations? Of course. He's never going to be a superstar, but they either have a strange bias against him or just think he is the worst NBA player in the history of the sport. Well, that's wrong, because I can tell you Cameron Payne's the worst NBA player in the history of the sport.
Hey-o.
If the hosts of the podcast are reading this, reevaluate. It comes off borderline personal and alienates fans of Denzel's. He has taken a noticeable step forward this year, and it's becoming easier to see how he fits into the plan for the future as he displays improvements in the area that he was most ridiculed last year. So let me start off by saying this. Denzel, we're not hating on Denzel Valentine.
He's right, man. I got a personal vendetta against Denzel Valentine. One time he cut in front of me in the line of a Portillo's. You know, I had to wait a few extra minutes to get my beef, and I've hated him ever since.
Like, is this guy mad that Shane Reardon brought up the fact that he went into a Mariano's and saw Denzel Valentine and, like, nobody approached him? Like, are you still salty about that? Are you mad that we have legitimate criticisms for players when they don't perform well? And, like, how can you say, this is my biggest thing, is, like, how can you say that about Denzel Valentine if you're a listener of this show over the last 4 weeks? Because we've given him nothing but praise offensively. Like, It's no secret Denzel Valentine's not going to be a future starter on a competing Bulls team once they're trying to compete for a championship. Like, that's just not, like, if you're thinking that way and you think that highly of Denzel Valentine's game, then I'm sorry, you just don't know basketball that well. Like, yeah. That's just my opinion, though. But maybe for Denzel,
maybe that's the same guy who asked me on Twitter after the Chris Dunn concussion news that he would be out indefinitely. Because I said, you know, silver lining here, we will be able to see Zach LaVine probably play a few more minutes at the point. Hoiberg can experiment with that. And, you know, before it was Archie Diakono who got brought up, I was kind of confused and intrigued by that move, that I thought, hey, maybe we'll get to see some more of Antonio Blakeney, who's been balling so hard in the G League this season. And somebody commented, like, well, like, what about Denzel playing the point? Like, what do you think about that? And my response was pretty clear cut. And I was like, look, I'm pretty sure that window has closed. That idea of Denzel being able to play point guard in the NBA, no, it's gone. It's over. I'm not a Denzel hater, but I think he has a very middle of the pack ceiling as his NBA career is still in its early stages. You know, you and I have talked about it, Jordan. I feel like we have a consensus here. Like, he's a bench guy. Maybe he's a bench guy on a playoff contending team. Maybe somewhere down the road, he's actually a bench guy on a championship caliber team. But that's it. He just does not have the talent, the physical skill set, the physical tools, or the talent, the athleticism to play the point in the NBA. And he's trying to find his way as a role player, a shooter, sometimes a facilitator. But the ceiling's just not very high. And I'm sorry, that's not hate. That's not hate on Denzel Valentine. That's looking at who Denzel Valentine, the NBA player, is realistically.
Absolutely. And I think you're spot on with that. It's like, we're not hating on Denzel Valentine, but you've got to come to a realization about being realistic about his expectations and what he can be on a competing Bulls team. And we talked about it. Like, when he got moved to the second unit, I not only said his offense has took strides. It has from last year. He looked lost last year. This year, he's knocking down shots and he's confident when he does. But the defensive weaknesses kill him. That's why he'll never be a starter. He's not athletic enough to be a starter. And the way that Fred Hoiberg wants to play him, and which is mostly at the three, he's getting torched. So in that capacity, him moving to the second unit and being a vital role player on the Bulls is not out the window. Like, nobody's saying that, okay, in 2-3 years, Denzel Valentine's not going to be here and he's just garbage. Like, that's not what we think of Denzel Valentine right now. Especially, he got high praise from guys, you know, over the last 4 weeks until Zach LaVine came in and took over his starting role then. Like, it's tough for a kid to be as efficient as he is on offense and take the strides that he did from year one to year two, like Denzel Valentine did, and then say, you know what, we got a guy coming back that could be, you know, our potential future. He's going to take your spot, even though you're playing well. Like, Denzel Valentine's performance over the next few weeks will be telling to see how he transitions to that second unit. And I thought he did a nice job with Atlanta and in Golden State's game. I thought he's done a nice job coming off with that second unit. And so, like you said too, with the whole point guard thing, that's totally out the window. And I don't think I brought that up even last year when we were talking about the conundrum of Michael Carter Williams and campaign and some of these other guys that were trying to play point when we had like six point guards on the team. I think that's completely out the window. Fred Hoiberg doesn't even want to mess with that. The idea that Zach LaVine would play some minutes at the point is probably more likely than Denzel Valentine at this point. And you're going to see Jerry and Grant. And then once campaign comes back, you'll probably see a little bit of him too as well. But yeah, this isn't a Denzel Valentine hater podcast by all means. I loved him in college. I think he's a great guy. I've talked to him a couple times too when he was with Michigan State. He's a really nice guy. We don't have hate for him. We're just being realistic with his expectations, and so should you. But I mean, I can't say too much because it's like somebody who's a diehard Michigan State fan is going to obviously have some bias, have some love for Denzel Valentine. But that's, I just wanted to clear that up. I want to clear the air for people.
Maybe the Bulls, you know, the Bulls Reddit person who listened to our show and said that we were haters of Denzel should get together with C-Red Fred and they can have a little Denzel love party, because apparently Denzel is going to win most improved player in the NBA this season. But I mean, yeah, he didn't have a terrible game against Atlanta. Actually, he was a plus 15, which was starters, reserves, the best plus on that Bulls team and their blowout win in Atlanta. But here's this. Denzel Valentine played 22 minutes off the bench and dished out 5 assists in addition to his 9 points, 3 of 6 from downtown. He also fouled out. He fouled out in 22 minutes of play. Six fouls in 22 minutes. Not a Denzel hater, but come on.
Yeah, and I will give him this, you know, he was 3-for-6 from the three. By the time that he was in the game, he had 3 rebounds, 5 assists, he had 9 points. So, okay, yeah, that's, you know, like, that's what we're looking for. If Denzel Valentine could be a 40% plus 3-point shooter off the bench, like, that's what the Bulls need. The Bulls need a spark like that off the bench.
And like, not a point guard, but as we have seen, sometimes he can generate good looks for his teammates. We have seen games like the one against Atlanta where his assist column looks pretty impressive. And you're like, wow, I didn't realize until, you know, I watched this entire game, but I didn't realize until after looking at the box score that Denzel had that many assists. Like, he can facilitate and he can find looks and he's a pretty crafty passer, but he's not a point guard. No, there are plenty of crafty passers in the NBA who are not point guards. And there are plenty of guys who are skilled passers who are not starting NBA roster material. And right now, that's not, I mean, Denzel is, he's got some nice tools. He does. But we're like Jordan said, we're just being realistic.
And also, too, let's throw in the factor, too, of the knees, too. Let's just, you know, we got to be realistic about his injuries, too, that he's had in the past. And like, I'm not saying that he can't go on and have a long career and stay healthy and all of this stuff, but that's also something to monitor too with Denzel Valentine. So, okay, I want to get to some other news. That's enough about Denzel Valentine. I promise you we're not haters here. So, So another person that it seems like gets a ton of Bulls hate. I thought it was funny as we got the announcement of the NBA All-Star starters. And so it was funny because the Bulls combined for 11 players on the Bulls team got player votes, got fan votes as well. So one player that did get one single vote, and I think this was completely out of trolling or it was him voting for himself, was Cameron Payne got one player vote for the NBA All-Star game. Kind of goes back to the whole thing of like maybe players just don't care. They like trolling. But either there's one or two things here that happened. Either campaign voted for himself or Quincy Pondexter, who if you don't follow him on Instagram or Twitter. He's low key like one of the biggest trolls in that Bulls locker room. And I think he's hilarious. And like, if you go on Instagram, he'll comment on Lowry Marketing stuff and Zach LaVine stuff and just totally trash them and troll him. So maybe it was Quincy Pondexter just throwing a little fun at Cameron Payne, but Cameron Payne got one player vote and he got almost 2,000 fan votes for the NBA All-Star game. So pretty funny there. Also, another fun fact for you, Matt, the Bulls combined to receive 170,669 fan votes. That's about 5,000 less than Rocket center Clint Capella received by himself. There's also 31 combined player votes that were two or more than Carmelo Anthony received. So 31 players combined for the same amount of player votes as the Bulls did altogether. And Carmelo Anthony received that too as well. So yeah, I don't think we're seeing any Bulls player in the NBA All-Star game this year, but we might see him in the Rising Stars chance for sure. Lowry Marcus could be in that Rising Stars chance.
And I mean, I definitely, once the fan vote was open, I saw tons of, you know, Lowry Marcus and hashtag NBA votes in my Twitter feed from Bulls Nation. And yeah, I can understand that. I mean, is he an actual all-star this year? Does he deserve to be an act? No, he doesn't. But that's, you know, that's Bulls fans trying to rally around the young, most exciting piece of this rebuild through the first half of the season. And absolutely, you want to vote for Lowry Markkanen, you're more than willing and encouraged to do so. The campaign thing is just hilarious. Like you said, it's kind of two potential different theories. He voted for himself or somebody else voted for him as a troll job. I really hope that campaign didn't vote for himself, because come on, buddy, you haven't played a single game this season. Everybody in Chicago since you've arrived have cracked jokes about your own Bulls teammates last season, talking about how they knew right away that you can't play at the NBA level. We crack jokes about how the only thing you're known for is your little pregame dancing routines with Russell Westbrook when you're on the Thunder. I mean, come on. If you voted for yourself, campaign, for shame. I'm pretty sure when I saw that, I made a wisecrack on Twitter that like he probably got confused and thought he was trying to vote himself onto the Dancing with the Stars show that's so popular, even though he's not a star. I mean, come on. And then I started thinking about, well, maybe if it was a troll job, you mentioned Quincy Pondexter, who's definitely a funny guy, a great personality for this Bulls team this season. Maybe it was him. I also thought a few other names popped up. Russell Westbrook. Like a jokey troll job vote from his former teammate. Or what about Doug McDermott or Taj Gibson? Either of them a little bit, a little bit salty about getting traded away and thinking, wow, like this, you know, this is what the Bulls traded us for. Maybe
Dougie McBuckets. I also thought about too, who did Cameron Payne play with at Murray State? Was that Kenneth Faried or was that Jay Crowder? It was one of the two guys I know played at Murray State with Cameron Payne while he was there. I don't know who it is, and I'm not fact checking right now. So sorry if you do know that, tweet at us at Locked On Bulls, because that would be awesome. Also, too, to throw in this too, to kind of wrap up this conversation. Wasn't there a story last year? Didn't Rajon Rondo get one player vote for the All-Star game last season? And he came out that he voted for himself? Or am I totally off base on this?
No, I think that's true.
I'm pretty sure it was. I can't find a story where it was, but I thought I could be completely wrong, but I thought that was the case too last year. And we kind of made it a story and it happened just after the Bulls sort of benched him for player misconduct or conduct detrimental to the team the way he did. So I thought that was funny. I thought it was good. It's a good little laugh that Bulls fans can get from a guy that's going to be coming back soon and we'll see what he does. So with that, let's recap this Atlanta game though, real quick, that happened over the weekend. What was some things that you saw in this Atlanta game? Obviously we didn't have Chris Dunn play, but anything that stood out to you in terms of like, that was a pretty complete game. I liked what I saw from blank. Anything that you saw that kind of stood out to you or that was kind of negative that maybe you thought, oh, that didn't look so good in this Atlanta Hawks game.
Yeah. So the big accomplishment, the most recent big accomplishment from Markkanen, of course, which happened earlier last week, is that he became the fastest player in the NBA history in his rookie season to sink 100 three-pointers, and it took him just 41 games. He beat, I'm pretty sure it was Damian Lillard's old record, right? There's all that hype about the fact that the Bulls drafted perhaps the shooter with the best stroke, and the fact that he's a 7-footer could become one of the most dominant and difficult to contest, difficult to guard pure shooters in the NBA for years to come. And that's what he was billed at in the draft. This was another game against Atlanta where Markkanen did not shoot his three ball well. He only took four attempts, but he didn't make any of them. He was 0-for-4 from downtown. But you take away those four missed three-point attempts by Lowry, and he was 8-of-12 from inside the arc. I love seeing games like that. It is another game. We've seen those games from Markkanen before, earlier this season, when the outside shot's not falling, it's not there for whatever reason, and he looks to get damage done inside. So credit to Markkanen for knowing, you know, all right, for whatever reason, the three ball's not falling tonight. I got to go to work down low. And also credit to Fred Hoiberg, because he is continuing to find more creative ways to take advantage of mismatches for Markkanen. And, you know, whether it's using guards in, you know, some tricky little screen game action, Justin Holiday was setting some good screens for Markkanen against Atlanta in that game. That's, you know, the player who comes to mind when I look, thinking back to watching that one. But credit to Markkanen for having another one of those games where he's finding ways to score other than the three ball, and credit to Hoiberg for helping him find those ways to score inside the arc.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback off you there a little bit and say that I had two things that were more specific than anything else that I thought stood out in this game to me. And like, granted, we're talking about the Atlanta Hawks here. We're talking about the worst team in the NBA.
One of the worst. Oh my God.
We thought we saw bad basketball during that 3-20 stretch. Oh man, this Atlanta team.
Did you see their 3-point attempts and makes? 11 yes. for 48. 11 for 48. My God. Man.
So the two things that stood out to me, kind of stood tall for me, was one, Zach LaVine getting 9 rebounds in 18 minutes of play. Yeah, he didn't shoot that. He didn't have a great shooting night, but the fact that he grabbed 9 rebounds in 18 minutes, that should alone should sort of impress people, because a guy that's going to be sort of in the Bulls backcourt for hopefully the long term of the future here. And if he can develop some type of rebounding game like he's shown in these short spurts of 20 minutes throughout these games, like, that was one huge thing for me too. So like, if he's not going to be a guy that can dish out assists and sort of help other players, if he can be a guy that can be an enforcer and help out guys like Lowry Marketing, Robin Lopez for the time that he's here, or even if he's playing in combination with guys like Mirotic and Portis down low, if he could be another guy that's got long arms that can be down there rebounding, you add that in with David Nwaba in stretches. And then once Chris Dunn comes back too, you got a lot of guys that can be, can be rebounding players on this team. And that's like, that's one of the biggest things I thought was surprising about this Bulls team. Even when they were without LaVine, they were without Dunn for stretches, they were without Mirotic before early on, that they were a middle of the road rebounding team. And I think a lot of that goes to credit to Robin Lopez for how hard he works underneath. But that was one surprise for me, was the 9 rebounds. I thought that was pretty cool. The shot's going to come for Zach LaVine. I know it. Like, there's going to be off games for him as well. But I think being under the basket, being physical and grabbing those 9 rebounds was awesome. Another person too I got to point out here is Ryan Arcidiacono. So this is his second NBA game. And for the longest time here, even I still had this thought to me, I always thought that this was a complete and utter waste of a two-way contract for the Bulls. And it frustrated me because it limited them on being able to pick up guys like we had talked about, like a Derrick Jones Jr. or some other flexibility that they could have signed other guys to a two-way contract. But he came up with the Bulls and had a really nice night, actually. He had 22 minutes. He shot the ball twice, knocked down 2 3-pointers. He had 4 assists. He had 1 steal. And he played some pretty decent defense on a terrible Atlanta, like, given it's the terrible Atlanta Hawks team, but he had a pretty nice night. And you know what? I'm not saying that it's still not a trash two-way contract, but it lessens the anger that I had that they didn't bring Antonio Blakeney, who's absolutely lighting up the G League right now. Like, there's no way Antonio Blakeney should not be in the G League, but obviously they're keeping him down there to get him reps. But I was angry when I saw Arcidiacono was going to be called up and be on this trip, and Antonio Blakeney was nowhere to be found. But the nice night from Arcidiacono, I mean, I'm not saying that there's anything there, but it was a nice night for a guy that this was only his second career NBA game.
Yeah, it was. It was nice to see Arcidiacono have a good game. And you know, we'll see how and when Hoiberg and the Bulls decide to use him moving forward, depending on who's healthy, who's nursing injuries. But I wanted to go back to your point about LaVine and his strong rebounding game, because to me, this is something that will be vital. You mentioned that the Bulls are, you know, not one of the best rebounding teams overall in the league. But actually, if you go and look at their numbers, the Bulls defensively have a defensive rebounding rate right now of 35.5. That's tied for the fourth best number in the league behind just Golden State, Charlotte, and Philadelphia. Offensive rebounding, a little less so, but they are fourth in defensive rebounding through half of the season. And you mentioned that Robin Lopez is a tough worker down low. Lopez never gives you big numbers in the box score for his rebounds. Like, he's not a guy who's going to Andre Drummond his way to a 20 rebound night. You know, even some of those nights when Pau Gasol, even at age 30, what, 35 or 36, had those nights where he would pull down rebounds in the high teens. But what Robin Lopez does so well, and, you know, if the Bulls do trade him, or, you know, if he eventually moves on, it will be sad to lose this. Hopefully the Bulls can find somebody who's equally good at it, is he doesn't concern himself with getting the rebound. He concerns himself with eliminating the opponent's biggest and best offensive rebounding threat by putting his body on him and allowing his guards or his wing to get the rebound, which in Fred Hoiberg's offense is crucial, because this is something that Fred Hoiberg talked about many times last season, is, you know, we need rebounding to be a team effort. We need our guards to be rebounding because we want to push the pace. And in some of the better games that Rondo had in a Bulls jersey last season, it's when Rondo, one of the smallest guys in the league, was doing his thing where you would look and be like, oh my God, Rondo had like 13 rebounds tonight. And Rondo would get those rebounds because Lopez was doing his job, and Rondo would push the pace offensively. Rondo's gone, and now it's LaVine and it's Dunn and it's Grant and it's whoever else that are trying to set the tone with the offensive pace at which Fred Hoiberg wants to play. And Zach LaVine showing the ability to be, hey, I can come in and I can grab rebounds. I can be that guy who, maybe I'm playing point, maybe at the time I'm playing the two, but I can be a guy who goes in, grabs a rebound, and pushes the pace and starts that offense before the defense can get set. Because that's what Fred Hoiberg's offense is all about. And so LaVine, to be another guy, especially one of the core guys in this young new group moving forward, to have that skill set to say, yeah, I'll go up there, I'll get the rebounds, and then I'll push the pace, that's very important for this Bulls team under the direction of Fred Hoiberg.
Some more analytics to kind of back up your points there and our points in general. So as a whole, right now as it stands, the way that the NBA is ranked 1 to 30, the NBA teams with total rebounds per game, the Bulls sit 13th right now in the league. 13th, 51.7 rebounds per game they're averaging. The teams that are ahead of them, Charlotte number one, Philadelphia number two, the Lakers number three, Oklahoma City four, Brooklyn five, Phoenix six, Denver seven, Portland eight, New York nine, Boston 10, Houston 11, and the LA Clippers 12. The Bulls sit at 13 right now. What's even more interesting, to your point about defensive rebounds, the Bulls are fourth in defensive rebounds per game. Philadelphia, Charlotte, and Golden State are the only teams better than the Bulls. And right now, the Bulls could easily squeeze themselves into that top three, because right now, Golden State's only at 36 defensive rebounds a game, and the Bulls are sitting at 35.6 right now. So I think a lot of that credit, too, needs to go to not only Nico Mirotic for being sort of a guy that started stepped up and decided to actually play some defense and rebound the ball, but also to Bobby Portis's credit too, and Lauri Markkanen to be a better rebounder. And also too, to just throw all of that in there. And then Zach LaVine's going to come out and be that guy that can grab some rebounds. And we also talked about David Nwaba being like an aggressive rebounder too. So I think this is all good things for the Bulls, like looking at rebounding stats, which is crucial, because you see how big of a killer it can be in the NBA if you don't have guys that can rebound, especially on the defensive end. Look at Cleveland. Look at how bad Cleveland is right now because they can't rebound. They don't have anybody on that team that can play defense and nobody that can rebound. So it's good signs, especially when you got a lot of young guys on here that are willing to, you know, put in that extra effort to grab an extra rebound, to go harder underneath the basket. So a lot of really positive things coming from the Bulls. All right, to kind of piggyback off there as we get into our last segment here, as we kind of wrap up the show, I wanted to take a look around the league. And so let's take a look at some of the teams, what's going on in the NBA, because there's a lot going on. And there's a lot of movement, a lot of things that could happen over the next 2 weeks that could impact the Bulls directly and indirectly. So first of all, let's talk about the most pressing news, Matt. And I'll let you break the news because you even told me this before we sat down and recorded. So what's the biggest news going around the NBA right now?
Yeah, this news broke just, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes or so before we hopped on the mics. And it was your classic Woj bomb on Twitter. Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN with a quick and to the point tweet saying the Milwaukee Bucks have fired head coach Jason Kidd. One of their assistant coaches, I believe, will be serving as interim. And you know that that's going to be one of the most sought after head coaching jobs in the league this offseason, because of the huge growing superstar they have in Giannis Antetokounmpo, who still has his NBA prime years ahead of him. But Kidd, you know, I just could not get the job done. It seemed like anytime I was, you know, looking at, listening to Bucks fans on Twitter, talking to friends of mine who are Bucks fans, there was just a growing sense of frustration with the lack of a sense of taking the next step for a team that has a legit superstar and hasn't seemed to be able to get the right pieces around him, hasn't seemed to be able to motivate that team, whatever it may be. We mentioned it earlier in today's show, the Bucks have been on a bit of a backslide and now are barely clinging to the eighth spot in the East. When some people before the season started projected this to finally be the year that with a even bigger and better and stronger Antetokounmpo, the Bucks were going to leap themselves into that conversation of upper echelon of Eastern Conference teams. And that just hasn't happened. They're hovering around 500. So at some point, you have to look at the coaching staff. And it's funny. I mean, I saw something on Twitter, you know, a little after that news broke, that initial reaction, the Greek Freak was devastated, I believe was the quote, devastated, when he heard of the firing of Kidd. And maybe that's some lip service. Maybe he didn't want to immediately throw his ex-coach under the bus to the media. But I feel like most everybody else that I've, you know, looked at, heard, seen their initial reactions on Twitter that are a part of, you know, that Bucks fandom up north, they're thrilled. Like, people were waiting and ready for this firing of Jason Kidd for a while now.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that too, because that's interesting that you said that Giannis was sort of, you know, devastated that Jason Kidd. I thought there was, and I'm probably totally off base, and this is why I want to have the guys from Locked On Bucks on to kind of talk about this a little bit more, is the fact that I thought maybe that there was kind of a growing conflict between Giannis and Jason Kidd there, and maybe it accounts to maybe some of the other guys that are surrounding on the Bucks team that are supposed to be important now. Like, I also think about guys like this, like Chris Middleton coming back from that injury is nowhere near as good as he used to be, or was he before pre-injury. So I look at guys like that, like Thon Maker has been a complete shell of himself this season. And, just watching.
And what about Jabari Parker? I mean,
absolutely. Between that,
who was supposed to be a star to pair along with the Greek Freak and has just been absent, a non-factor.
That too, like, he's been battling a ton of injuries, so we'll give him a little bit credit there. But like, also, they made that trade for Eric Bledsoe, and I know that there's got to be some time to kind of let him get integrated with the system, kind of get comfortable with the guys, understand how to play with each other. Like, I get there's that kind of grace period that you get when you get to a new team. Maybe that they just didn't think that he was running. It's obvious, obviously, now that he wasn't running that team the way that they thought it was supposed to be. And now with, like you said, to take that next step, that's the most important part for the Bucks. I feel like, is like, you're about to move into a new stadium next season. You've got the rising star of the NBA, the superstar in Giannis. This is the time. You've got a lot of players around them that, you know, we're supposed, like, we talked about it last year, like, taking that next step for the Milwaukee Bucks. I thought they were going to be a top three, top four team in this East, especially how bad this Eastern Conference is. Like, and for them to be just kind of floundering, it's scary for a Bucks team that was sort of looking to take that next step. So I'm interested to see who they hire. Maybe, like, obviously the first name, the most, probably the most reported name out there is going to be thrown out there is David Fizdale. He's the one that just got outed in Memphis. So maybe there's a inclination there that they would hire him. I don't know other coaches that right now off the top of my head that they could go out and hire, or maybe somebody that they're interested in, or somebody maybe that's internal that maybe will take over that job. But a lot of things that I would like to see over the next few days that will probably come out about Jason Kidd's time there. Some players that maybe didn't like him that were glad he was pushed out. More, I want to see what more from Giannis too, like sort of his feelings on this and where they go from here. But definitely interesting news coming out of Milwaukee, just 90 minutes north of Chicago. So to go along with that, I want to also talk about too another pressing thing that's been going on in the NBA, and that's how bad the Cleveland Cavaliers have been. So maybe this is a good sign for the Bulls. Maybe this is a good sign for them in terms of maybe shopping around Robin Lopez. Like I had talked about when we were talking about rebounders, the Cavaliers are terrible. They are terrible on the boards. Like they can't get anything out of Tristan Thompson. And I wonder if that's the spell of the Kardashians.
It's the Kardashian effect, man.
It is, man.
But like, does anyone know what the hell Chris Humphries is doing these days? Is he still even in the league?
I don't know.
Maybe, maybe not. But it's the Kardashian curse. Those people are terrible, terrible people.
And look at what that family did to like guys like Lamar Odom and James Harden and Reggie Bush in the NFL. Like,
let's be fair. I'm pretty sure no one in the Kardashian family forced Lamar Odom to do a bunch of cocaine. But maybe he was stressed out about being attached to that god awful family and said, "Hey, how can I cope with this? I know, I'll go to the clubs and do a bunch of cocaine."
Well, that family is just an absolute dead. They if you want to kill your career, you go and marry one of the Kardashians or get involved with that family, because that's what they do, that across the board to everybody. Like you look at the entertainment industry across the board, anybody they've even been remotely involved with, things turn negative for that person that jumps into that family. So yeah.
Didn't one of them just have another kid with Kanye like over the weekend? Wasn't that big news?
They did. Kim had a baby, another baby.
And they named it Chicago West, right?
They did. And so now they have St. West, they have Chicago West, and they have Northwest. So those three is going to be the Kardashian West family. So yeah.
Terrible for those children.
Well, all right, to get back to the Cavaliers, my point about the Cavaliers is
right.
Yeah, this is basketball, not keeping up with the Kardashians recap. So yes, to get back to the Cavs point, I think that this could be an opportunity where you give a call to Cleveland and say, how willing are you to try and push to restructure things and try to reset up things? Because I know Robin Lopez still has what, another year on his contract after this year. Maybe that's a guy that they try to go after it to be like a legitimate center there. I heard Basketball Wizards. There's a guy on Sirius XM that was talking about how one of the worst mistakes that they had with Tristan Thompson was Ty Lue's bringing him off the bench. He thought that was the biggest mistake for Tristan Thompson in terms of his confidence, in terms of what you want to get out of Tristan Thompson. He thought that Tristan Thompson, no matter how bad his play was, should start, because that would give you the biggest opportunity to get something out of him. But guys like Dwayne Wade are regressing. Like they're not playing it up to what they thought they were going to get or what we saw early on in the season. That's no shocker. You're not getting any defensive out of Isaiah Thomas. LeBron James is frustrated. So a lot of stuff stirring in Cleveland. So I wonder if we could maybe give them a call or two and say, hey, can we dangle some guys out there? Like maybe a guy that'll crash the boards for you and Robin Lopez. Maybe a guy like Justin Holiday who can come off the bench and shoot for you. And hey, maybe you even need a backup point guard. We've got Jerian Grant for you. So a lot of interesting things going on in Cleveland right now.
And I mean, it's still, to me, it's still Cleveland is the team to beat to come out of the East. I mean, it's crazy because they have just been playing so poorly. I think they've won. I think they're like 4-13 or 4-12 in their most recent stretch or something crazy like that. I mean, a stretch that we haven't seen from a LeBron James led team in a long, long time. We're talking early 2000s.
3-7 over their last 10.
Yeah. So you still think, all right, well, but yeah, but it's LeBron James and it doesn't matter who else is around him. He's going to drag that team to the finals, because really, is any team in the East going to have the stones to beat him? And as good as Boston looks, as good as Toronto looks, I'm sorry, until I see otherwise, the answer is still no. I'll take the team that has LeBron James on it. But this season in particular, it's something that people are talking about in Cleveland, and it's no secret, that team's defense is abysmal. I mean, heck, even former coach who was fired halfway through their championship season in 2015-16, when they actually had the number one seed in the East, David Blatt, who was coaching for an all-star game overseas, made a crack about, well, I hope we don't give up as many points as the Cavs gave up the other night. Because the Cavs gave up 148 points in a game that was not an exhibition all-star game. Are you kidding me? Their defense is so bad. So bad. And it got to the point where, because the Cavs are an older team, actually the oldest team in the league this season, they don't do a lot of practicing while the season's going on. But they have recently had some practices with defense as the focal point, because that's how bad their defense has gotten.
Yeah, and it even gets to the point where they're having a hard time hiding guys like Kyle Korver out there, guys that you thought would come off the bench and be able to knock down some threes. Like, he's looking like he's getting older now. You know, he's finally taking that turn. Some of these other guys that they were counting on, like, you know, Iman Shumpert and J.R. Smith, they're not playing the way that they paid them. Like I said about Dwayne Wade. So it's definitely going to be interesting, but Cleveland's got some options here. But I would, if I was the Cleveland front office, I would not want to be them right now, because you have some major decisions to make for this NBA trade deadline. Because like we said, they got that Brooklyn number one pick right now in 2018. Then that right currently sits at number eight. So is it a play to the front office for Cleveland to want to maybe try and sell another team on that, like maybe someone in Oklahoma City to go out and get a Paul George? You don't know what they're doing. Maybe you just try to use that pick to go out and get another star, convince LeBron to continue to stay, and that you are committed to winning now and bringing in talent that can help you win now. Like, that's a lot of decisions to make. Or do you say, you know what, we're just going to keep on pace, maybe pick up one or two players here and see what we do, and then roll the dice at the end of the season and not, you know, potentially set your franchise back if LeBron does in fact decide to walk away at the end of the season from Cleveland, and you just threw a pick away and now you're sitting there with nothing. Like, that's a huge decision to make for that Cleveland front office right now.
It is. It's a big one. And I feel like that fan base is expecting them to make a move. But, you know, the question is, like, what, you know, what? Like, who do they bring in? How do they fix this team, specifically this defense? And, our friend Sean Hyken, former host of this show, Locked On Bulls, I saw a tweet of his over the weekend that was like the Cavs have to do something, but nobody knows what that something is, because it's hard to see this team getting that midseason fix, because there are a lot of problems, most of them on the defensive end. But what do you do? Who do you bring in to fix this? Because it's a cluster, and like they're going to try to have to figure out at certain points how to reintegrate Derrick Rose, how to reintegrate, you know, Tristan Thompson to a more efficient level. These other pieces that have been kind of in and out of the rotation, it's been a giant mess. And yeah, they're still hanging in there and they're third in the East, but one and two are out the window, I think, at this point. Yeah, they're only four games back of Toronto, and I'm pretty sure six games back of Boston. But this Cleveland team looks bad, and I don't know what they're going to do to go about fixing it. If it is something that somehow involves Chicago, if they look at who Robin Lopez is as a player on both ends of the floor and say, yeah, we could use a guy like that, and the Bulls are able to get a nice package in return, absolutely. I mean,
yeah, or even a guy like,
I don't love the idea of helping out LeBron. Never have, never will. But if it's going to help the Bulls rebuild, hell yeah, strike a deal with Cleveland. See if it would hurt. It would hurt to see Lopez play for them in the playoffs, because you know, even just after a year and a half, I have come to really enjoy Robin Lopez, not just the basketball player, but the person. And you know, we're talking about him being behind Nico, the second most likely and most logical option to be moved. It would bum me out if that happens. I'll understand it. I'll embrace the move as a smart one, but I would just hate it if he went to Cleveland.
Yeah, and so get the, and also too, for Bulls fans, get the idea even just remotely out of your head, if it popped in there, that the Bulls could potentially get that Brooklyn pick. Just get that out of your mind right now. No, if the Bulls do trade somebody, like, you know, if they're having conversation about possibly Mirotić or maybe Robin Lopez, you could maybe, I mean, I would imagine that the Bulls would ask immediately for Cleveland's pick, and which right now currently sits at 24. Maybe you even talk to them about taking Tristan Thompson from them or taking Jay Crowder from them, like, because those guys are on long-term deals, are making a lot of money. So maybe they want to do a salary dump in order to get some, but hey,
I swear if Tristan brings any of the Kardashian family members to Chicago, like, we already got Kanye passing through Chicago frequently enough with a Kardashian in tow. We don't need more of them in this city. We are at our Kardashian capacity in Chicago.
Hey, I refuse to have any Kanye West slander on this podcast. I refuse it. I refuse it. I refuse it.
He's a talented musician. He's not my favorite. He's talented. I'll give him that. Granted, like, some of his albums are straight fire, but I'm just saying, I don't need more Kardashians in Chicago. I really, really don't.
I agree with you. All right, to wrap up here, last 30 seconds, I just want to run through two other things too real quick with you, Matt. One, shout out to Lou Williams. He is absolutely lighting the NBA on fire right now. So over the last 15 games, shout out to StatMuse too, because StatMuse is awesome. They compare players across the NBA, and they even do some NFL and MLB stuff too as well on Twitter. But over the last 15 games, they tried to match up Lou Williams' stats with another player similar to what he's been putting up with another player in the NBA. And you probably can guess who he's matched up with if you've been paying attention at all to Lou Williams. He's got a 95% match rating with Stephen Curry. So Lou Williams, 29.3 points per game, 33 minutes played per game, about 34 minutes played per game, shooting 43.8% from three and 90.9% from the free throw line. Steph, over those 15 games of shooting, is averaging 29.9 points per game, 33 minutes, 45% from three and a 90% from the free throw line. So shout out to Lou Williams for sparking something inside of him after all those injuries the Clippers have been through this season to kind of carry them. And hopefully, you know, they're probably hoping to try and make a playoff run here as well to try to get back whatever they can before, DeAndre Jordan walks at the end of the summer, and God knows what they do with Blake Griffin. But yeah, shout out to Lou Williams. You know, he's striking his inner Stephen Curry. Also, I wanted to ask you too, this, Matt. I wanted to ask you, odds you think maybe Lauri Markkanen gets into the 3-point contest this year?
Oh, I would love that.
Oh, I would be so excited.
I would love that. I'm trying to think, do you know who the Bulls' most recent 3-point contest participant was? I'm like, my guess is Ben Gordon.
Maybe, or Kyle Korver when he was here for a short stretch. Oh,
I bet Korver did it when he was with us. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, otherwise it would be Ben Gordon, because that would be, that's going far back too. That's going almost 10 years. Yeah. So,
And I know Stevie Kerr won it at least one of the years during the second three-peat. I would love to see that. It's always fun, but let's be honest, as far as All-Star Weekend, it's the dunk contest. And I know, there's been ups and downs in recent years. The one between Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon, like their dunk contest battles have been fantastic. And we're not going to see, I'm guessing we're not going to see LaVine in the dunk contest this year. The three-point contest has always been kind of, second fiddle, third fiddle, if you will, behind the actual game itself and the dunk contest.
Agreed. And I heard Zach LaVine on Waddle and Sylvie. It was about 2 weeks ago now. And they asked him if there's, I think there is a requirement to, they have some type of age restriction, I think, or the amount of times you can qualify to be in the dunk contest. I'm not really sure. I'd have to go look that up. But he said, maybe in the future he could maybe get himself out there to win. So he said he's not throwing the possibility away that he could maybe take home another dunk contest title. But I think first and foremost, he's going to try to get back healthy and get to that peak that he wants to be at with the Bulls. But yeah, it would be a whole hell of a lot of fun for Bulls fans to be able to at least tune in to watch Lauri Markkanen play in the Rising Stars Challenge. And also, if he gets the opportunity, which, come on, to be the fastest guy to get to 100 three-pointers made in a season, like that should automatically qualify you for the three-point contest if you want to play in it. So that would be a lot of, that would be super exciting for Bulls fans.
Absolutely qualify. There's no doubt about that. The kid set a record for fastest 100 made threes as a rookie. Like, he is qualified.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday on the Nothing But Net channel. Dash Radio, free radio, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of basketball on the Nothing But Net channel. Like I said, follow us on social media. Get our podcast and subscribe to the show. Give us a rating. You could win yourself Bulls tickets with us to join us at the United Center on February 9th as the Bulls take on the Timberwolves. Jimmy Butler returns back to the United Center. So remember, leave us a review, screenshot your review, and send it to lockedonbulls@gmail.com. We will be picking our winner soon here, so make sure you get your entries in as well. Thank you so much for everybody who has entered so far, and thank you so much for listening. We're going to have a ton of content, some great guests this week, so make sure you're stay tuned, that you're subscribed to the show. But for Jordan and Matt, enjoy the Bulls-Pelicans tonight. We're out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.